America is a lot of things. It's a powerful and influential country. It's a place that launched a shaky experiment in democracy that's somehow lasted almost 250 years. And while the experiment may be getting shakier now than it's ever been, I think American democracy will live to turn a quarter millennium old next year. It's given us the Beach Boys, Ebola Restin', and The Room. And it's become a home for immigrants like my co-host Jollibee the Durian, who is currently off location scouting in Philadelphia.
Hold on.
Hey. Caleb from the channel Classy Whale. Yeah.
Hey, Tor. Sorry to bother you, but Jollibee the Durian is in my apartment right now, organizing all the foods in my fridge alphabetically. By smell.
Oh, he's quite good at that. You should read his column in Better Homes and Durians magazine sometime.
I'd better go check the newsstand.
Anyway, there's a lot about this country that one can celebrate and criticize, especially on a holiday like Independence Day. But today, I want to highlight a part of the American essence that has kept this channel alive. America is a place where someone with a big idea and a lot of money can pull off a lot more than anyone thinks they should be able to, even if their big idea is ultimately a little wonky. Today's man with a big idea and a lot of money wanted to transform the way we traveled between cities, using a technology that, to this day, hasn't really caught on anywhere, even in countries that do have robust high-speed rail. If anything, he was about the closest the real world ever had to the Simpsons monorail guy. He worked to build maglev trains wherever he could, one of which almost didn't fail. And he was American as they come. I'm your host, Tor Parsons. These are my co-hosts, Thimble the Doll and Sluds the Shoggoth, and welcome to Tor's Cabinet of Curiosities.
Wait, did somebody say trains?
If you have the trains and transportation flavor of autism, you already know what this episode is about, but for anyone unfamiliar, a maglev is essentially a frictionless railway. You know how magnets can repel each other? Put strong magnets on the underside of a train, put strong magnets polarized the same way on the track, and the repelling force is so intense the train hovers above the track. Bingo, no friction. That's a maglev, a magnetic levitation train. In theory, this levitation can lead to incredibly high speeds and prevent wear and tear at any speed since there aren't many moving parts. But hey, that's just a theory. A maglev theory.
So when I was a kid, and almost as much of a train fan as I am now, I would check out books from the library about trains. And most of these would have a section at the back about trains of the future. Pretty much universally, they would talk about maglev trains. By the time I was an adult, I was told, trains would float and travel at unimaginable speeds. Well, I am an adult in stature, if not in maturity, and there is exactly one high-speed maglev system in the world, in China. There are a few that are slower, that run more at the speed of a regular metro system, and there are none in the Western Hemisphere. But that's not to say maglevs in the West haven't been proposed or attempted, and several of those proposals and attempts trace back to one guy. His name was Toni Morris, and his company was called American Maglev. Tor and I actually found out about this guy while researching for one of my videos on Classy Whale, but when Tor had written his section about Toni Morris, it took up most of the script, so I told him, look, this needs to be a Tor's Cabinet episode. And so here it is. Take it away, Tor.
Once upon a time, there was a company called American Maglev Technologies, an outfit that tried many times to build a maglev in the US&A. They claim to still exist, although they don't try very hard. The full extent of their successful maglev building consists of three test tracks in the eastern US, none longer than a mile, and all now demolished, I think. But in the 90s and 2000s, they got a lot of attention. American maglev was getting politicians and businessmen on board, so to speak, with maglevs as the wave of the future. High-speed maglev test tracks had been already built by a private company in Germany and the government rail operator in Japan, and those made sense as places that would build maglevs, meticulous cultures that are good at engineering. But for a second, it looked as if America was going to catch right up to them, if you didn't look too hard into the background of American maglev technology. In a previous episode, I explained the term gadget bond, a fancy, technologically advanced transit system that's built more for novelty than practicality and fails to really justify why it can't just be an ordinary train. I have my own thoughts on gadget bonds. I'm not sure they're always bad, but maglevs in general are probably the most widely cited example of a gadget bond, and American Maglev, if their website is to be believed, was turning a gadget bond into even more of a gadget bond. That is, they were taking a mode of transport that already seemed kind of unnecessary, given that high-speed trains on rails already exist, and they made innovations to the maglev concept that seemed kind of unnecessary given that maglevs already exist. This was an American maglev, baby, reinvented from the ground up. Ain't no German or Japanese maglev, no way. Who won that war anyway? I'm not sure why American Maglev's website is still up, considering that they haven't done anything in about a decade. But it's still up. And there they explain that really they were trying to simplify maglevs. They derided the German-built maglev in Shanghai, which I rode when I was in China, and the Japanese one, which Tom Scott rode, as too technology-focused. Their system had, quote, dumb track, i.e. just a strip of magnets on the roadbed, presumably with the sort of signaling systems by the track that a conventional train would use, rather than in-cab signaling electronically picked up from the track, which the other, more successful maglevs use. This limits your speed. Since high-speed trains take so long to stop and zip by signals so fast, their signals have to be on board the train rather than out by the track. American Maglev demonstrated their proof of concept with a 2,000-foot test track in the Atlanta suburbs, where they boasted of achieving, quote, speeds in excess of 35 miles an hour. You gotta wonder why, if they were trying to simplify the concept of maglevs, why they didn't just go the whole hog and replace the magnetic track with two rails and some wheels. A maglev that isn't technology-focused is like a cheap limo. That is the opposite of the point. Why not just a train? American Maglev, baby! The father of American Maglev was a fellow known as Tony Morris. He was not originally a train guy. He was a civil engineering consultant for large construction projects who claims on his LinkedIn to have advised Delta Airlines and the national rollout of USA Today. He first got maglev pilled in the early 90s when he was hired as a consultant for the Atlanta Braves, who were planning a move out of their crumbling old ballpark in the city center out to a new stadium way out in the suburbs. How were fans going to get out there? Well, Morris proposed a maglev. Who was going to build that maglev? The existing maglev companies, Transrapid in Germany and JR in Japan, were too expensive. "I'll do it myself," said Tony Morris. They say that failure is an orphan, while success has a thousand fathers. Morris was the only guy pushing for a maglev in Georgia. He tried to get sponsors on board by suggesting to make the trains into big themed ads. Quote, "We were going to turn our vehicles into giant Coke bottles or beer bottles or hot dogs," he told the newspaper Rough Draft Atlanta. That would have been whimsical at least. Richard Scarry meets Madison Avenue. The Braves did move to their suburban ballpark, but without a mass transit link. Morris tried to get people interested in building a maglev connecting stadiums for Atlanta's Olympics in 1996, which was a decent idea. The Olympics have always been partially about showing off a country's progress to the world. If there's anywhere that's a natural habitat for gadget bonds, it's the Olympics or another splashy global event. But again, he was the only person who wanted a maglev in Georgia. So Morris moved on to another place that did seem to want a maglev, Florida. In 1989, a Japanese-German consortium had proposed a privately built maglev connecting the Orlando airport to Epcot. Details are murky on how this project died. Everyone involved points fingers at each other. Disney insisted they wanted the maglev, but lobbying from Universal Studios scuttled it, worried about how the maglev would funnel tourists to their main rival's theme park. The Japanese businessman who spearheaded the project blames Disney, who apparently refused to let the maglev build a station right at Epcot and instead proposed a location in the middle of a cow pasture 3 miles away. There are statements from Florida's then-governor Bob Martinez and from Disney spokespeople both supporting and opposing the maglev. The purported speed of the maglev, which ranged in news reports from 250 to 350 miles an hour, much faster even than the Shanghai maglev, kinda suggests that this may have all just been vaporware from the start. A few years after the failure of the Florida maglev, in stepped Tony Morris to give the project another go, this time with his painfully slow American maglev, baby! How fast was this one gonna go? Yeah! Show me the money, investors! Morris did at least build a test track in Florida, in the coastal town of Edgewater, east of Orlando, which was the first of three maglevs American Maglev really would end up building, predating the Georgia test track and an additional oddity. The fact that I can't find out how fast this one went, while they bragged about the Georgia one exceeding 35 miles an hour, says enough. Third time was the charm. By the late 90s, Morris was working on what finally seemed to be his first truly successful project, the Old Dominion University Maglev, which Caleb just made a video talking about in detail.
Yes, if you would like to hear the story of the Old Dominion University Maglev, which you almost got to ride had it not been for one key thing, check out the video that Tor and I made on my channel, complete with graphics by Jollibee the Durian and archival footage.
American Maglev, with help from Lockheed Martin of all people, as well as state, local, and university governments in Virginia, was contracted to build a short-haul shuttle maglev on the campus of Old Dominion University in Norfolk, Virginia, connecting dorms to academic buildings. Finally, Morris had sold someone on his maglev plans, someone who presumably didn't do too much of a background check into his gambits. Now that a Morris-built maglev really was under construction, Morris clearly thought, well, a one-mile shuttle track today, tomorrow the world. He promised that the ODU maglev would eventually be scaled up into a full-on high-speed intercity maglev, something that still doesn't exist anywhere in the world, connecting the Hampton Roads area of Virginia to Washington, D.C. Somehow, the Virginia state government trusted him enough to give American Maglev a $7 million loan that would only be paid back once this pipe dream maglev, which would have to use completely different technology than the low-speed short-haul ODU maglev, was fully built and turning a profit. Of course, there was no chance of that, not with Tony Morris in charge. But Morris's gambits were starting to get even weirder. He had gotten so maglev-pilled, transportation wasn't the only thing he was promising to revolutionize with magnets. He seemed to believe that electromagnets were like Megalon, the deus ex machina all-purpose substance that solves all problems in Francis Ford Coppola's Megalopolis. Have you seen that movie? You really gotta. It's the second most insane movie I've ever seen, behind only The Room. Anyway, what else was Morris trying to magnetize? Medicine. In 1998, he set up a company called Neotonus, which developed this device. It's a pelvic floor stimulator where you sit in a chair next to it and it zaps you with strong varying electromagnetic fields, purportedly to cure incontinence and erectile dysfunction. I'm not sure if it feels comfortable, but all these pictures of old people calmly reading magazines and stuff while being Neotonist have me sold for one thing. I can get one on eBay. Should I go for it? Neotonus tried to get the American Medical Association to endorse their device, which they called NeoControl. They applied for Category 1 status, which is basically a seal of approval where the AMA designates a technology as well-established to work and normal for doctors to use. For evidence, Neotonus pointed to a study showing impressive results in magnetic pelvic stimulation carried out by one Neil Galloway. Who was Neil Galloway? One of the main stockholders of Neotonus, of course. It was the only study they cited. Of course, the AMA rejected their application, at which point Tony Morris went to the impressively brazen step of suing the AMA for deliberately suppressing his revolutionary technology. The lawsuit was dismissed in a summary judgment, a relatively rare form of judgment in which the court rules that no trial is necessary because there are no facts being disputed. The ODU maglev failed too, in a way that was directly linked to ODU's cost-cutting mission. See, the ODU track was built on an elevated alignment over the campus. On an elevated train track, there's always necessarily a little bit of sag in between the pillars. Usually not enough to be visually detectable, but when you have a technology that relies on tiny precise measurements, like for example a maglev hovering on a few millimeters of air cushion, it matters and needs to be factored in. When the ODU maglev was first tested on campus, it barely moved. It took days for engineers to figure out what the issue was. Shouldn't American Maglev have detected this problem when they built their test track in Florida? That's why you have a test track, right? Nope. The Florida test track was built right on the ground, so it didn't have this problem. So the ODU Maglev needed a suspension system, one of those fancy-schmancy components the foreign Maglevs have that Morris initially gloated about not needing. Wouldn't you know? You take out enough parts, eventually the thing stops working. Those did have a purpose, after all. Maybe simplifying the design of a maglev isn't something you can really do. It kind of reminds me of Doge. A previously successful businessman gets into a new job he's not used to, where he assumes there's tons of bloat and lots of money is being spent that doesn't need to be spent. So he cuts all the costs he can see, and only then does he realize the hard way that, wait, no, there wasn't that much bloat. All that money was doing something. And it's especially ironic because American transit planning is one of the government functions that I feel like could benefit from a careful doging. Look up Alan Levy's Transit Costs Project. A lot of American transit projects really do spend far more money than they need to, but building a maglev, let alone inventing an entirely new type of maglev, is the opposite of the way to cut costs. Again, I don't mind gadget bonds in theory, but I see something like a maglev as a way to entice normal people to ride transit when money isn't a concern. Sadly, the way to make American transit more affordable is to make it less interesting, not more. You can still build a maglev. I still think it would be really cool to have a maglev in the US, and because it's cool, works as a legit answer to why not an ordinary train. But Toni Morris isn't the only person who's been trying to sell maglevs on the idea that once scaled up, they'll somehow be cheaper and require less maintenance than typical trains do. Usually, because of the logic that they don't get ground down by friction since they hover. This doesn't survive a collision with the real world. Sure, they don't have friction, but all the other bespoke components add up to far more specialized maintenance than a train with wheels. What did American Maglev do after the failure of the ODU project? Packed up and moved to parts of the country where they hadn't heard of the ODU Maglev failure, of course. Later in the 2000s, Toni Morris proposed another maglev in the Atlanta suburbs. He partnered with a Native American tribe in New England to build a maglev to a tribal casino, which was such a short-lived idea, the existence of the plan for it was only discovered in 2024. In 2011, a project was launched involving American Maglev that wasn't American or a maglev and is still somewhat mysterious, indicating there could be other American maglev boondoggles in obscure parts of the world we haven't even heard of. The Nigerian city of Port Harcourt set its sights on building a monorail, which is different from a maglev. Monorails are sometimes considered gadget bonds too, but there are way more successful monorails in the world than there are successful maglevs. The Port Harcourt monorail started construction in 2013, with trains and track built by Intamin, a firm based in the tiny European country of Liechtenstein that mostly manufactures not urban transit, but amusement park rides. And the incidents section of Intamin's Wikipedia page may be the longest and most horrifying list of amusement park accidents I've ever seen. Okay, am I about to reveal that Intamin is the new name of American Maglev? No. In fact, it's not clear how American Maglev was involved with the Nigerian monorail project, just that they were involved. There is nothing online about their connection to the Port Harcourt monorail. We just know about it because of detailed design blueprints for the Port Harcourt monorail, discovered in February 2024 by an urban explorer who broke into American Maglev's abandoned Florida test facility. Either way, are you surprised to learn that monorails are not currently gliding above the streets of Port Harcourt, Nigeria? A track was built, but it took years, and apparently it never reached all the stops it was supposed to. Details are so thin on the ground, the most accurate map I can find is just picking out the track on a satellite view, and despite the existence of that, sources disagree on how much of it was ever built. Intamin began claiming to the internet that the project was operational when it clearly wasn't. Oh, it's down in Nigeria. Who's gonna know? Rumors began circulating by 2016 that the project was going to be canceled, and in 2021, the state governor casually confirmed those rumors in passing. After the monorail construction had been, quote, guzzling a whooping sum of money, in the memorable words of the Daily Trust newspaper. According to Nigerian news sources, it was a feud between two local politicians, each accusing the other of being flagrantly corrupt, with apparent accuracy on both parts, that doomed the project, although knowing who their partners were, the world may never know. In 2015, after a gap in his resume, possibly filled by the Port Harcourt monorail, Morris made another go at the Florida project, with exactly the same specs as his original proposal. This time, there was no buy-in from the Orlando airport or from Disney World. He claimed he'd raised the money from private investors. Toni Morris is the closest real-life person to the Simpsons monorail man, a comparison that I am far from the first person to make. What is Morris doing today? I'm not sure. Investors seem to have finally lost interest in the prospect of levying America's mags. Apparently, the last time anyone had any information, the vice president of American Maglev was someone named Jordan Morris. So maybe the Leving is turning into a family affair. The test tracks in suburban Atlanta, and the track that almost opened to the public in Virginia, again, check out the Classy Whale video on that, those have both been torn down. The one in Edgewater, Florida, allegedly was still showing off its trains until 2013. In February 2024, an urban explorer discovered that it was remarkably easy to access the Edgewater test track and took photos and videos of the now-abandoned Maglev train and track, as well as discovering a treasure trove of completely abandoned documents about all the projects American Maglev had tried to sell people on, without which this video wouldn't have been possible. This suggests American Maglev is now totally defunct other than their online presence. But someone is still frequently Googling American Maglev, because after years of abandonment, less than 2 months after the thread about the Edgewater test track went viral on an urban exploring forum, construction equipment arrived, and the entire facility was torn down. I have no real evidence to back up this claim, but somehow, I have a sneaking suspicion that American Maglev is poised for a comeback someday soon, maybe under a different name. Watch your backs, curious people. Although, if Toni Morris is going to sneak up on you, I don't think he'll be too easy to miss, as he approaches at speeds in excess of 35 miles an hour.
Hey Tor, it's me again. Listen, Jollibee went outside and now he's on a date with a pineapple from the fruit stand across the street. They're in a karaoke bar singing along to Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. None of this makes sense. Hey Jollibee, fruits aren't sentient!